At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome along to Elton John's Spanish Super Cup from Saudi Arabia, thankfully annual. Real Madrid are back on top of something at least, and who can say it wasn't thoroughly deserved? Nonsense tournament, of course. Who cares about the result? Also, sack Valverde, that was humiliating! Hey, whoever said football fans had to be consistent. So we've just been Googling who the new Barcelona manager is, and actually true, we had to just double check. The B team coach's actual name is Xavi Garcia Pimienta. Now, he's not been appointed yet. Although by the time you listen to this, who knows? What a shambles at Barcelona. Arguably, at the moment, you could still argue that they're the best team around at the moment. I know Liverpool fans will say that they are, but Barcelona are one of the best teams around. They lost a Spanish Super Cup match and the whole place has gone into meltdown. Terry, we've got loads of questions. Thank you very much for all the questions that we've been sent. So we will get through loads of questions from everyone tonight because there are no La Liga games to look at. But we do have these games from Saudi Arabia, Terry. The semi-finals were certainly eventful. The two teams, of course, that should have been playing in the Spanish Super Cup didn't make it to the Spanish Super Cup final. We ended up with another Madrid derby, another extra time, and another Real Madrid win. So, have you changed your mind about this tournament?
No, not at all. Actually, the semi-finals, the first one was Real Madrid against Valencia, and that was like Real Madrid's playing a practice match against their youth team. It was ridiculous. It was so one-sided. I don't believe there's that much gap in terms of quality and class between the two teams, but there was in that game. And that's a Real Madrid without Benzema, without Bale, without Eden Hazard. So I thought that was a disappointing competitive match. The second semi-final was great to watch. Atletico Madrid are a completely different animal when they're forced, dragging, kicking and screaming into attacking football. And it was a remarkable comeback. Barcelona were in control of the game. And Atletico, by the end of the game, they were on fire. It ended up being a really good watch. And then in the final, Atletico took the game to Real Madrid, surprisingly. And there was an element of, you looked at it and you probably thought, Simeone must have thought, well, there's no, those three players I just mentioned. If there's a chance of beating Real Madrid, this is going to be as good as any. Luka Jovic was playing up front on his own, a whole load of midfield players playing behind him. And Atletico took the game to Real Madrid for 15, maybe 20 minutes. And then that was it. They reverted back to type and they sat deep and they looked to protect their goal without really threatening the opposing goal on too many occasions. Actually, I watched the whole game, extra time, penalties. I didn't think it was a great game, I have to be honest. And Real Madrid's, the four penalties were, no one was going to save them. I did wonder whether it was going to be 0-0 with Courtois in one goal, in goal and Oblak. But Real Madrid made no mistakes with their four penalties and Atletico out. The three they took, two were missed, Trippier being the only player to score. So it kind of had a sense of reckoning that it was going to be Real Madrid when it went to penalties, just by the looking at the body language of the Atletico players who have gone through that procedure before against Real Madrid. And the final was slightly controversial towards the end of the game. Morata was burst through, just got past the halfway line, running into towards Courtois in goal, clear of the defence. Fede Valverde was the player chasing him. He got to about 20 yards out, and Valverde didn't just bring him down, he hacked him down with a vengeance before he got to the penalty box. He was sent off. The penalty was struck into the wall. In this day and age, when you're getting so many changes, law changes of the game, I do wonder whether that's still a red card with 5 minutes to go is a justifiable punishment for a player that's doing everything he can to stop the player getting into the penalty box at the very least, to, otherwise it'd be a penalty or going on to score the goal. I looked at that and I thought, well, that's an interesting one, because you could make a case for that law being changed into, if it's blatantly obvious what you're doing, then it should still be a penalty.
Valverde red card, Valverde has to go, etc, etc. All the Barca fans were very excited about that, weren't they? We'll get onto that later. George says, five midfielders, no wingers, 4-3-2-1 system. Zidane is a genius, long may it continue. Brownie says, a la Zizou. Zidane says he's a better coach now than he was first time around. Are you impressed with how he's done? So a couple of, give us those answers. How's Zidane going? How much do we read into this? We've spent most of the time building up to this tournament saying it's a nonsense tournament, and now we're hailing Zidane as a genius and reading the final rites for poor old Valverde on the basis of the results.
Yeah, no, I think we have to rate it in slightly, but I think if the interesting tweet was Zidane saying that he thinks he's a better coach than he was, you have to trust him. I mean, he's the person that should know. Now, whether that ends in winning league titles again and winning more Champions Leagues, because he's set himself such a high standard. But he would have learned, and he would have benefited from taking the break and stepping away and identifying where he made mistakes, because not everything he did the first time was right. I think most managers in general do improve as they go along if they're given the opportunity. So I've no doubt that he'll be better this time around. But as I said, that's he's got some living up to do to his first period as manager. As for the tactics in Saudi Arabia, it's kind of forced into it because of the players that were missing. As I said, it was a midfield five. It was the usual three: Casemiro, Modric, Kroos, Fede Valverde and Isco. So there was elements of, maybe Barcelona and the Pep, where just playing the one striker and tons of midfield players. So, yes, in this tournament, he did a magnificent job. You could see that the players from, I was going to say all teams, but certainly three of the teams were up for the fight, wanted to win the tournament. Valencia possibly, and I understand. And I know we had a tweet about that. Why on earth were they paid significantly less than the others? Which is totally wrong. They were there on merit, not through an invitation. The other point about this competition is there's no clarity on who's going to be in it next season, because, say, for instance, Levante won the Copa del Rey. Say, for instance, Real Sociedad finished in the top three. Are they going to take that to Saudi Arabia and sell it with Levante and Real Sociedad? And, so it's this season it suited them fine. They had Valencia, arguably one of the biggest, clubs in Spain, winning the Copa del Rey. But it could be anyone next season. Are they then going to take that? Are they going to handpick, the three big teams and then one other team they can somehow crowbar into it to make up the numbers? So I'm not impressed with the tournament. I'm not impressed with the fact that we missed a round of the Liga fixtures. It did give teams the opportunity to fulfil Copa del Rey matches. But, I think the Super Cup should be done and dusted before the season starts and should be kept traditional.
Last quick word on Real Madrid. George, again. Thoughts on Kroos's goal against Valencia? Cheeky one, wasn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant. Because we have seen goals scored before direct from a corner. There's an element of luck in it. But with his one, it was totally different because
he sees Dominic off the line, doesn't he?
Yeah, Dominic creeps off his line. Kroos being the world-class player that he is, not only got the ability to do it, but the speed of thought, you know, that instinct straight away to take it quickly and then have the skill to wrap it into the near post was a brilliant strike. Fantastic goal.
Right. Big, deep breath, everybody. Monty will kick us off. WTF is happening with Barcelona. Right. Shall we? Can we break it down into its various components?
I agree with him.
Yes. Right. So let's start off with this question from Phil. Given the news that Suarez is out for 4 months, is it a blessing in disguise? For all of his qualities, I think Barcelona are better off without him. I bet Griezmann is chuffed. So I think that might be, well, I'm guessing you'll disagree. For all of his downsides, to lose a player of that quality for 4 months has got to be a setback, hasn't it?
For Bournemouth?
did I say
I think you said for Bournemouth. It's a setback for Bournemouth.
Yes, well, let's not get into Eddie Howe's problem, shall we? But right, yeah. If I said Bournemouth, everybody, I will clarify. Luis Suarez plays for Barcelona. I know
I'm just checking with VAR, John. No, it is a blow. He's been involved in something like 14 of their last 14 goals, either scoring or having a hand in assisting them. So it is a blow to be out for 4 months. It's a surprise as well, because it's not something we've seen him suddenly pull up with. And the biggest issue is this is an ongoing problem with a knee injury that he's been suffering from possibly 3 seasons now. So it's a big problem. I mean, in terms of numbers as well, they're not blessed with loads of experienced strikers that can come in. They have an injury-prone Dembele to come back, but who knows how he's going to be when he comes back, either in terms of fitness, whether he's going to be physically well or whether he's going to be playing well. But it will give Griezmann an opportunity to play up front. Or we've seen in the past, Valverde, if he's really wanting to piss people off, can play Vidal up front. So it gets Vidal in the team. We saw that in a couple of games where you're thinking Suarez is missing, Griezmann to play up front, and it was pretty much Arturo Vidal was running around up front, doing an impression of Kevin Prince Boateng. So it's they need to somehow. I mean, it needs to be Griezmann playing up front now with Messi, but I'm not 100% convinced that Valverde, if he's still manager, will choose that position for Griezmann. But it's a massive blow for Barcelona.
Actually, where is the prince at the moment? They can bring him back. We're in January, of course. No one's mentioned that. Anyway, let's not mention that. Right, let's get on to the board, shall we? Right, this is a selection of the questions. Side says, would love to hear your thoughts on the Barca board. How they stuck with Valverde after two humiliations in the UCL Champions League and are now looking to get rid of him after a loss in an irrelevant competition. For me, he should have been sacked after Rome or at least after Anfield. Shane, will the instability caused Bartomeu and Abidal hand the title to Real Madrid and Mr. Plus, as he styles himself, says, does the present Barca circus sideshow confirm that Bartomeu is the disease and Valverde merely a symptom? His reign has brought knee-jerk Coutinho, Dembele, Griezmann signings and Boateng. Yes, Boateng to this once dignified club. That is the anger. So we'll get on to where Valverde start. We'll get on to who might replace him or might not be replacing him. And I know we've discussed it before. They've sort of got away with it because they've been winning leagues, because they've had Messi, because they've got money to buy good players. But the board, Terry, of Barcelona, they've done a bad job. They've been a mess, haven't they?
Yes. I mean, this is a total and utter disaster. And it needs to be rectified from the very top, because what we have now is they're touting a job to Xavi. And I now believe to Ronald Koeman, who have both turned it down. They haven't sacked Valverde. They may be left in a situation, probably, I think, where Valverde is told to continue. They've left him, they've shown no respect. Whatever Barcelona fans think of Ernesto Valverde, he has brought titles to Barcelona, and he's been treated with no respect whatsoever. And I wouldn't go as far to say it's going to be impossible for him to continue. he's going to have to swallow his pride. I think he is the manager now for the rest of the season until Xavi decides whether he wants it or not in June. I think that's when will be the plan. The way they've treated him is an absolute disgrace. It's a farce. And this just goes to prove to what already a lot of people thought, that they weren't fit to control a club as big as Barcelona. I mean, on top of all those things you just mentioned, we've had an ongoing situation with Neymar, from a player that walked out through every toy he had in the Prem out to get his way. And then when he wants to come back, bearing in mind he's taking Barcelona to court as well for money that's owed to him and his father, and Barcelona still somehow gave legs to that story. And there are still legs to that story that one day Neymar's going to come back to Barcelona. The way he left the club, the minute he wasn't happy and he wanted to come back, they should have told him in no uncertain terms that no way whatsoever was he going to be indulged. But that's still going on. I mean, we still see every transfer window that he's linked with Barcelona. And it's a shambles. I mean, the way they've handled this situation, we're now seeing people like Quique Setién being mentioned. Maurizio Pochettino has been mentioned. I don't know, be interested to know how that would go down with Barcelona fans. He kind of dug a hole for himself, didn't he, once when he said that because he was so Espanol, he could never manage Barcelona, which was one of the most foolish things he has said, because it shuts the door on one of the biggest jobs in the world. And now we're talking about a B team manager that we've had to Google to try and check out some background. So my guess is that they're going to have to go round to Valverde's house and beg him to stay until the end of the season. It might cost them a few quid, but I think under the circumstances, they should be more than willing to cough up with some sort of arrangement, a plan, a severance payment at the end of this season, so he can, you know, steer Barcelona through what should still be a promising, exciting season. Currently top of the league, level with Real Madrid, still in the Champions League. So it's far from being a disaster. It's how all parties can work for the next few months, knowing the inevitable is going to happen. It happened at Manchester City. You remember Pellegrini came and announced that he was leaving, and Pep Guardiola was coming in. If it's done in a mature way, it can work.
But they were poor poor the rest of that season, weren't they?
What Barcelona should have done here was spoke privately to people. Not when we're in Saudi Arabia. We'll go and speak to Xavi and have some selfies done and offer him a job, you know, that we were going to offer him in the summer. Do you fancy taking it now? Letting the world know that was the case. It's appalling how they've gone about it. I'm sure Eric Abidal, I'm pretty sure, has Xavi's phone number. And at some stage, he could have just rang Xavi and said, look, we're thinking of doing this. Would you be interested in this? Would you be interested in that? Before they did have to meet up while they're in Saudi Arabia and declare to the world that they were there flirting with Xavi to be the new manager, when they've already got a manager, a dignified manager who carries a lot of respect in Spanish football around the world now due to the job he's done at Barcelona. I know he isn't popular. I understand why he isn't popular. He probably wasn't popular when he got the job. But, you know, just treat the bloke with some respect and fairness.
Okay, let me read a few opinions. So I think you've agreed with Daniel. Xavi to Barca, is it bad form to pursue Xavi while Valverde is in charge despite his shoddy year? So yes, we'll go with that one. Bernie says, assuming Xavi does not move to Barcelona until the summer, can Valverde continue to function as normal at Barca, given that all that's unfolded in the last 7 or 8 days? Shane, slightly less respectfully, says, when Valverde is fired, do you think he will manage Aruba or the Vatican City next?
I didn't get that one.
Right then. So what else? David, the obvious one, Xavi looks unlikely to happen right now, but thoughts on the way the club has carried out his business as Valverde being treated with due respect. So for all of the clobber that Valverde has got over time, I think people are, they're agreeing with you that it just looks shoddy. Cameron, why doesn't anyone like Valverde? And then Sanju, this one sort of moves us on a little bit. Is Xavi capable of coaching Barcelona, or is this another case of the board doing something to keep people pleased before the election year? The election year thing is important, isn't it? Which might have a part in Xavi's delay, mightn't it? Because there are when the campaigns get going, they usually come with certain a campaign ticket, as it were, like with the coach or with a promise of signing this or that player or a certain amount of transfer money. So it's a very this next year coming up is a very political situation for Barca, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 2021, and I think the candidate that's going up against Bartomeu is a guy called Victor Font, and Xavi was his ticket. Now, there's no guarantee that he's going to be the next president, so it's risky from Xavi to pass up an opportunity where, even if he takes it with Bartomeu and Victor Font then wins, then if he's got a good relationship with him, I don't see the issue there why it would be a necessary change. If he's, you know, done okay, if he's popular, and he's going to be popular, it's going to be a popular choice if Xavi does eventually take it. Is he up to it? Nobody knows. I mean, we're reviewing this season and, you know, criticising teams, players. Everything, you know, comes out in the wash. And at the end of the season, we'll see if Zidane is the genius. It may be still that Valverde is there and Barcelona win the title and he could be the genius and, you know, walk out in a blaze of glory from Barcelona. So everything is we don't know. But I assume that Xavi, like Zidane, I mean, Zidane took the B team at Real Madrid. It's no comparison between being manager of the B, Real Madrid Castilla, to being manager of Real Madrid. But I assume Xavi, like Zidane, knows football. Everybody knows that Xavi was one of the most intelligent football players going. He knows the game. He knows how to take a training session. He knows the mentality of players. And if he does take the Barcelona job, he's got a much better chance of succeeding at Barcelona than he would if he was taking over at somewhere like Getafe, Valladolid, Mallorca. You know, so you've always got a chance at Barcelona because you're going to have the quality of players. And another thing with Xavi as well, Messi's 32. I wouldn't want to wait too long. Because you're getting your first manager's job with the best player in the world that wins games when your team possibly don't deserve to win games. And I've said it in the past when we've talked on the podcast and in commentaries, Valverde has come into this job at Barcelona from all the other teams he's managed. And, you know, in games where he's been struggling, he might be looking around on the bench to see who's got to bring on that something different. And then at Barcelona, he's, you know, some games they're struggling to play well. The form's not good. And all of a sudden, Messi goes on and mazy run, beats four players, chips the goalkeeper or swings a free kick in from 30 yards. And Valverde must just be sitting there thinking, never, you know, he's the only manager that's got that player. So I think Xavi has to be careful he doesn't wait too long because there won't be a Messi at Barcelona in his prime.
Two related questions then, just to finish off on Barcelona. Coffey says, is it feasible for Barca to get back to their playing style of 2015-16? He isolates that particular year. And Dan, will Barcelona ever reach the heights of challenging consistently for Champions League titles during Messi's remaining years?
Yes, it's the last one, because they're not a million miles away from it last season. I mean, challenging, you know, it's a disaster result in the second leg in the semi-final when they were 3-0 ahead. So, yes, and they can win it this season. I mean, on their day, they, you know, it's difficult. I mean, I'm a Spurs fan. Tottenham were not the second best team in Europe last season. I admit that. Whoa. So it's a knockout tournament and, you know, anything can happen, as we saw in the knockout stages last season. So, yes, Barcelona can win it this season. They should be challenging there or thereabouts every season. Can they replicate the form, the style? Yes, of course they can. You know, why Messi's there, why not? But it needs... The other thing I've made throughout the season is they need a manager with authority. They need strong personality. And at times, I think in the last season and particularly this season, it looks to me like the players are leading, running the show as opposed to the manager. So it needs a manager that commands respect, that leads them, that puts a plan in place, because at the moment, you know, we're seeing them, it's 50-50 in terms of possession in most of the games they play now. It's a total, drifted totally away from the style of play that served them well. And I don't see the reasons why they have, other than the fact they can't close down up front as quick as they used to, because they have two 32-year-olds that, you know, A, are not particularly interested in doing it anymore, and B, physically, in terms of Suarez, is not up to be able to close down. So that makes the job of the midfield players totally different. Last season, most of their season was 4-4-2, which is a mile away from the 4-3-3, but it was relatively successful. So they can get back. I mean, we could pick a 4-3-3 now that serves them well, that could, you know, get back to that style in terms of keeping the ball, keeping possession, moving the ball quickly, winning it back quickly. But they need someone to lead them on that path again. And the obvious one is Xavi, of course.
Right then. So let's just give a quick nod to Mark Kane, who sent in that question about Valencia. I'll phrase it as a rhetorical question. Can you explain why Valencia's cup winners received the smallest amount for this sham tournament? If not, why would the Federation not divide the money equally? That's a very good question, Mark. We don't have a reasonable answer for it, except that you know who you're dealing with. We will be back with a bit of transfer chat and a bit of Copa del Rey chat after a short break.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome back to El Telen John's La Liga Weekly. That's what it's called, even though we're having a week off from La Liga for reasons that we can't quite understand. Let's talk about a bit of transfer news, shall we? We're back on Barcelona, Real Madrid, I'm afraid. Should Barca or Real Madrid make any real moves this month? Is there a position that they need to cover, and who should they go for?
Barcelona definitely a striker.
Yeah. But can they so who can you feasibly buy that's good enough for Barcelona that's hanging around? Because obviously,
it could be a loan again, couldn't it?
The Prince was the best they got last time they're in this situation.
Yeah, it could be a loan. I mean, you're probably looking at someone who's experienced enough to possibly come in and cover on the bench, because Suarez is out for 4 months. That's February, March, April. It's barely going to be anything left of the season. So, yes, they've got a fine replacement in Griezmann to play as the centre-forward. That's a position that he had played in for 5 seasons at Atletico. So that shouldn't be a problem. But, you know, if he gets injured, suspensions, the only option they would have would be go back to playing a false number nine with Messi. So I think somewhere along the line, there's hundreds of players, and there must be someone somewhere that's not playing the amount of games that he would like to at his club, that has good experience, better than Prince Boateng, I have to say, that could come on loan and serve Barcelona till the end of the season.
So that's where you set the bar, as long as he's better than Kevin Prince Boateng. Jordan Rhodes? He's available. He's always available to go on loan somewhere. No, is that a bang in a goal? Anyway, we'll leave that one hanging, shall we? The Jordan Rhodes to Barcelona link. Lucas wants to know, Luke de Jong is a great striker, ... in the Eredivisie. In every move abroad has been woeful. With that, should Sevilla get a younger, more mobile forward in this window, considering they had and gave the boot to Dabur? So everybody wants to sign. Every club everywhere wants to sign a striker who's going to score 20 goals a season. Sevilla have them and then move them on. As the, who's the top scorer in Italy at the moment? Of course, it's old Ciro Immobile, who was deemed to be a failure at Sevilla. Yeah. So, I don't know, is Lucas right? Do you want another striker going into Sevilla?
Well, there's talk of Javier, and then there's going off to Los Angeles as well. Mm. So I think they're trying to clear the decks to try and raise some finance. My guess is that they will go back again for Mariano Diaz. I've seen that mentioned. So that fits the bill of a younger, more mobile centre-forward than Luke de Jong. So I think that's clearly what Sevilla are trying to do. I find it rather strange. It's not something that's happened in the past when a manager at Sevilla has pretty much dismissed Monchi's signings, mm. which is, in this case, exactly what's happened. Ronnie Lopez, people will say, who's that? Yeah. He was their biggest purchase in the summer. We haven't seen him at all. De Boer, he never got an opportunity. We can't criticise him. He just never got given a chance. And at one stage, they were trying to sell him pre-season before the season started, having just bought him. So that's a big disagreement between the director of football and the manager there. And now Javier Hernandez, who's proven he can score goals wherever he's been. I'm interested to see whether it's the players, whether it's De Boer, De Jong, Javier Hernandez, or my opinion, I think it's Sevilla's style of play that hampers the strikers. If Mariano Diaz does go to Sevilla, he clearly has to leave Real Madrid, and he was decent when he came on in the Super Cup final. You could argue he looked better than Jovic. Real Madrid having bought him for 20-odd million, not giving him an opportunity at all. They bought Jovic. He's only playing at the moment because Benzema's not available. But you do wonder, why did they buy Jovic? Why didn't they just give Mariano more opportunities? So I think he clearly has to move on. And it wouldn't surprise me if Sevilla somehow are trying to raise the money through sales to try and... Because I think they tried to buy him when Real Madrid got him back from Lyon. So I'm thinking that he'll end up at Sevilla, which I think would be a good signing.
Okay, and now a deal that has happened. Kelvin wants to know, what are your thoughts on Espanyol signing Raúl de Tomás? What else do you think they might need in January? Do you think Abelardo will keep them up? Interesting move, wasn't it? Because they bought him, haven't they, for 20 million from Benfica. Interesting move all round, isn't it? Because they could, I know it was an improved performance in the one game so far under Abelardo, but they could easily go down. And they've just splashed out a lot of money on a striker.
Yeah, I think it's a really good signing. And I think it's the only signing they needed. When you saw the performance against Barcelona, you could see clearly it's a team that's underachieved. The system of play suited them better. Experienced players either came back or played in their best positions. So like Javi Lopez coming out right back. David Lopez was playing in central midfield again. Itarraspi come off the bench to cover David Lopez in the later stages. The one position which was iffy is the second striker. Caleri will work his socks off in every game, which is a decent attribute. Doesn't score enough goals, but he can be a nuisance. In the last game against Barcelona, they played Oscar Melendo as the second striker. And I think Abelardo will go with two strikers, Raúl de Tomás and Jonathan Caleri, and the 4-4-2 that served him well at Alaves. And I think they've buying Raúl de Tomás, who incidentally came off the bench in the Copa del Rey to make his debut at the scoreline at 1-0 and scored the second goal that wrapped the game up. So he proved he could score goals. Possibly another player that Real Madrid could have done worse than, you know, to give an opportunity at some stage to be that, you know, backup striker to Karim Benzema. He never got a chance. Surely could score goals at Rio. And I think his instincts are great. I think he's a natural goal scorer. Whether he's going to keep get enough goals to keep Espanyol up, tall order, but I think it gives them a fighting chance now.
Jack says, did Alenya make the correct decision by agreeing to join Betis on loan?
100%. Because sometimes players go, I understood it was between Betis and Getafe. Now, with all due respect to Getafe, Carlos Alenya fits in better with the style of play at Real Betis as opposed to the style of play at Getafe. So I think if you've got that choice, you have to make a call as a player. A, where am I going to play? You know, there's no point me going somewhere alone and being stuck on the bench. And I think he's a good fit for Real Betis. I think he's a quality player. And I actually think if it works, it could be a permanent move, because I don't see a future for him at Barcelona. But I think he's got the quality to play for a good team in La Liga, and I think Betis is a good fit for him.
Nick says, we'll do this one quite quickly, Nick, if that's all right. The question dominating Spanish football at the minute, are Real Mallorca going to stay up?
Oh, the quick answer would be no. But the slightly longer version was it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a tough second half of the season for Mallorca. I'm not sure they've got any money to bring anybody in. And it's been a struggle. Started well. The highlight was beating Real Madrid, but they're in a tough period at the moment and don't pick up enough points and goals away from home. So it's going to be tough.
Okay, good answer. Now then, Copa del Rey, Richard Cosmala. Of all the people who get in touch with us, of course, Richard is at a Copa del Rey game. Copa del Rey today in Cueta. Beautiful to be reminded of what football is truly about, not just about the big two or three. Should the English FA take a leaf out of Spain and try to do something to save the ailing FA Cup? Now, Richard is a Huddersfield fan, so he would have been disappointed by Huddersfield's early exit from the FA Cup. Now, one thing I would say in defence of the English League, the English FA, I commentated that Southampton-Huddersfield game, and I had people who followed me on Twitter in various parts of the world saying, I heard you on the Southampton-Huddersfield FA Cup game. It's not something that is easily done for the Copa del Rey. So there are pros and cons to the way that the Spanish are dealing with the Copa del Rey. The old cliche about, oh, the English FA Cup is the best because we take it more seriously. That's long gone, isn't it? But what do you think of the... And Raf asks a specific question. What about the new format, the one-legged format of the Copa del Rey?
I prefer the one-legged format. I think it's better. It makes it actually gives the smaller clubs a fairer chance, because over two legs, you know, a bigger team could mess up the first leg, but, you know, wrap up it, you know, recover it in the second leg. So, and two-legged matches, it was hard to, you know, get the attendances in. So I think that I prefer the one-legged format, definitely. I think that the difference is, though, in England, we have four full-time divisions and a pretty much full-time fifth division now, don't we? Whereas in Spain, there's two divisions, and then below that, you could be drawn, you know, to go and play. I remember Athletic Bilbao in the last season or the season before. I tweeted a picture where they were playing on an island somewhere, and they were playing on AstroTurf, and the pitch had about 8 five-a-side pitches marked out on the pitch that they were playing on. So in Spain, because of the two full-time divisions, if you get drawn against a lower league team, more often than not, but they're part-time, and in municipal stadiums. And it does give a different look. It throws it back to the days when, you know, Hereford were beating Newcastle on their non-league pitch and you know, cut upsets like that, which we tend to not see anymore, because even the conference teams have got decent stadiums, decent pitches. We don't get that. We don't see Manchester City go and play a non-league team in the FA Cup on a pitch that's been, you know, is covered in mud and it's in the middle of winter and it doesn't happen. So, and it's not going to happen, unfortunately. But that's what we get in Spain. And I saw a picture of Paul Tu, I think, Real Sociedad at that match at Cueta, and having, you know, selfies done with, not selfies, people were taking pictures with him. Don't get me wrong, he wasn't standing taking pictures of himself on the AstroTurf pitch on the island just off of the southern Spain. He was obliging, supporters were on the pitch, there was a little bit of security, but nothing was heavy-handed. The players were happy to spend time with the supporters, and it was a case of a big club with big-name players going and playing a smaller club. The result went Real Sociedad's way, but everybody at Quetta was happy, and it's a memorable day for everybody involved in that club. So there is an element of, we can't do that in this country anymore. It's, you would need a really lower league team, and I'm talking below the conference, to get to the third round, to pull out Manchester United in the bag. And then the likelihood is that club would probably ask Manchester United to host the game, because they would get more supporters and more revenue, and it'd probably still be on television. So that it's not going to happen in the English FA Cup anymore.
Bradley says, Getafe going out of the Copa, a blessing in disguise, ? They lost to Badalona. Timor was sent off early on in that game. Is it a blessing in disguise? They've got the big one. They've got Leganés on Friday night, haven't they, as we get back into La Liga?
Yeah, and they've got Ajax coming up in the Europa League. Yes, I think it is. Actually, I'm not in favour of clubs getting knocked out of cups. But when you look at the team that Bordeaux picked, it clearly was in a team with a mindset of getting knocked out of the cup on purpose. It was pretty much full strength. So it was a surprise result. But now they're out, it does mean, you know, the likelihood of them going all the way through to the final to win the competition was unlikely. So therefore, you know, if they go out of this stage, they've already played a number of games in the Europa League. They've done really well to get where they are in that competition. I actually think they've got a chance against Ajax if they believe, because I don't think they believe when it comes to the big teams that they play in La Liga, the teams above them in the league. So they have to change that mentality and play like they do week in, week out against everybody else in the division. So I think, I don't think it's not a blessing in disguise. I wouldn't go that far, but I don't think it will hurt them too much to, you know, in terms of the workload, in terms of number of games.
Right, we've got time for one more question. Bradley, I'm going to disqualify your question about chocolate orange and the fact that
another
it's
one. Curly
frankly Whirly. Silly. Right, okay. Right, okay. So there we are. Good answer, Terry. He's gone in with Curly Whirly. Because it's a podcast, we don't have to say anything about other chocolate bars being available. If you want to say Curly Whirly.
Not anymore.
Then, yeah, you can. Right then. So question from Annie Rood. Terry Gibson, what is the best thing about being a commentator? Apart from La Liga, will you feature in this year's Champions League games? In our country, they're in BT, aren't they? So you haven't yet been poached by BT, have you? But if the money's right, anybody, by the way, yeah.
And enough curly whirlies provided. A lot of curly whirly, of course.
But so that can answer that's a nice question, though, isn't it? What's the best thing about being a commentator?
I think the fact that you immerse yourself, particularly for us, but for me, because I pretty much purely, I commentated in Wolves Newcastle yesterday in the Premier League for Sky on site. That's a rarity for the job that we do. A lot of our job in both of us is done off tube, which means we're in a booth and we're making the best of what we can, watching it off a monitor.
Just to point out, all those Premier League games they are on site, all the ones that you hear on Sky, the commentators are there. And for the avoidance of doubt, because this crops up all the time, match of the day commentators are also at the game. Don't be confused by that. They go to the game. I find it bizarre that there's this move away from. I understand when you're doing, I did some Europa League games. I did Karabag. So they're not going to send you to Baku to do that. But for domestic games, I find it bizarre that you're not at games. But there we are. So it's a frustration, but it's becoming more common, isn't it?
Yeah. No. And I think the other thing is, because I'm pretty much exclusive to Spanish football, the thing I like is you get immersed in that league. I take enjoyment and interest in watching other leagues, and in particular the Premier League, of course. But you do wrap yourself up, so you know that what's happening on a weekly basis, you know, on a daily basis, because you want to and you have to keep on top of everything. But I guess when you get the opportunity to go and do an on-site game, because we do so many off-tube, when you do get the opportunity to, you know, I've been lucky enough to do games at the the Bernabeu and the Camp Nou, and it's, you know, that's a massive pleasure. You know, I've commentated Tottenham Hotspur. Yesterday I was at Molyneux. It's that gives you a real buzz when you're there on a match day. You're in with the crowd. You have to get there early to make sure you don't get caught up in traffic, and you get that sense of, you know, the importance. Even yesterday, the Saturday, I went to Wolves Newcastle, and I'm amazed that, you know, you see the atmosphere in the stadium, and then how important it is to mums, dads, sons, daughters, nans, granddads, all, you know, complete families. So it was great every now and then to get a taste of what it really means. People travelling from all over the place to go out and support their team. But, you know, I'm lucky in the fact that I've barely done a day's work in my life, the way I've been a footballer, coach, football co-commentator, stroke pundit, whatever. And I'm, you know, I think that that's the best thing about the job I do, that it's not work.
How was Adama, by the way?
He did about four or five really good runs, four or five really good things. They should have scored from a couple of them. The most bizarre thing was in the warm-up before the game. It was freezing cold. It was a howling wind. It was a cross between sleet and rain, and it was a heavy downpour. And then Wolves came out to warm up, and we're high up. We're just under the roof. We're practically on the roof. And there's a lunatic running rounds warming up for Wolves with a short sleeve T-shirt on. The rest of the players have got hats and scarves and everything. And the Wolves players are running around and one player's got a T-shirt on, and it was Johnny Otto. And I thought, really? Oh, of course it would be. He's used to the rain, having played for all those years for Celta Vigo. So it was I was with the commentator, Gary Taphouse, and I said, it's the Spaniard. He couldn't believe it, that the Spaniard that you know, running out for warm-up at Molyneux, freezing cold, winds howling, rain chucking down, and it was the Spaniard running around with a T-shirt on. So it was good to see him play again live. Good to see Adama Traore as well. Raul Jimenez, of course, former Atletico Madrid player that we barely saw play for Atletico Madrid. He was good as well. So it was all round, it was a good day. But it's always a pleasure to commentate on any game.
Right. And we will be back in La Liga this weekend. So league games coming up, including, as I say, Leganés versus Getafe, always a lively one, on Friday night. And the likes of Real Madrid, Sevilla, Saturday afternoon, Barca in the Sunday night slot against Granada. And we will be back with another podcast reflecting on all things La Liga next week. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.